Short reflection on that psalm, Psalm 86. And it's a psalm that reflects on that theme of conflict and the psalmist praying for a peaceful way out. Well, Psalm 86 is known in some places as Bits and Pieces. I remember a song called Bits and Pieces. I don't know if you remember that one, Dave Clark Five, I think, in the 60s, Bits and Pieces. Well, this is known as Bits and Pieces because the psalmist, the person who wrote it, took his words from other Hebrew scriptures and other psalms. So it's a bit of a mix. And it's in four parts. The early verses ask for safety. The psalmist wants to be safe. Guard my life, he asks. Have mercy on me. And then the verses that follow that, in those he describes the nature of God. He knows that he can ask God to keep him safe, because God is forgiving. He's abounding in love. God is great, and he does marvelous deeds. And the psalmist asks to learn the ways of God so that he can follow in God's way, and he can learn to praise God and to glorify God's name forever. And then he goes back to his request, and he appeals to God to rescue him from his enemies. Enemies who do not love God. And then he reiterates his petition. Have mercy on me. We go back to the beginning of the psalm there. Have mercy on me, he says, because you are slow to anger. You are abounding in love and faithfulness. And then he asks for a sign, a token. And he asks that this sign from God may be seen by his enemies so that they are shamed because they discover that the psalmist calls on the one true God. Well, the psalm is especially helpful for somebody who is undergoing persecution. And the psalmist was confident that his Lord would protect him and forgive him and love him. He was certain that God would rescue him from those that persecuted and chased him. And just look at all the praise he showers on God. God is great. He alone is God. The psalmist worships God so highly that he wants to walk in God's way for the rest of his life. I'll switch the picture. Thank you. John Calvin, that great reformer, said that we all need mercy. God's saving power in us comes from his compassionate love for us. We don't actually deserve it, but we get it. And I think the Psalms are wonderful aids to prayer. If you're in a spot of trouble, praying this psalm can really help you to hand your trouble over to God. And it can help to give you confidence that God will sort it out for you. And it's especially helpful, I've discovered, if you read it out loud. When I went to the Globe at Easter to hear some of the King James Bible read out, I don't know if you had, any of you had the opportunity to do that, but I went to one of the readings there, only to discover that the actors weren't actually reading from the Bible. They were speaking out the Bible. And I happened to be there for some of the books of the Old Testament, including the Psalms. And I had never really appreciated the Psalms as a spoken word. And they're magnificent when they're spoken. You can really get the flow of the words and the flow of the emotion there. So I suggest, if you would like to, choose a psalm, maybe one of the shorter ones. And if you can find somewhere at home where you can read it out loud, do so. And do it two or three times. And you can really go into the psalm and really enjoy that conversation with God that the psalms lead us into. So that's a suggestion from me, because I found that particularly helpful when the psalms aid me in prayer. When I was thinking about preparing the service today, I happened to be walking, and I walked part of the Lee Valley Regional Park, this is. I walked through some wildflower meadows, and I've got six pictures to show you here. We'll just stay on this one a minute, because it seemed to me that the grass here could well represent that wheat. Wheat is obviously a kind of grass. And then all these different flowers in there are what probably in our garden we would call weeds and we wouldn't want there. But in these lovely meadows, they are mixed up together. And just look at that mix. How could you begin to separate on your hands and knees probably those wild weeds and flowers from the grasses? We'll just go through these six pictures. Thanks, Tom. And we'll just stay with each one just for a few seconds, just to get an idea of that mix. Right, thank you. Next one. And again. And again. Yep. So there's the grass that you want, with all the weeds and flowers around it that you don't want. Thanks. Let me go on to the picture that reminds us we're looking at parables of Jesus, our summer reading. Not so summery today, I'm afraid, but a summery reading there. It'd be lovely to think that's Galilee, where these parables were spoken. Well, in this particular parable, wheat and weeds, or traditionally I think it's known as the wheat and the tares. And you notice in the reading that the servants in the parable wanted to do what Jesus told them wasn't needed. They wanted to go straight away and pull up all those weeds that were in the way of the wheat. Well, the Greek word used here is zizania, or zizania. It's a type of grass called darnel. It certainly is a weed, but it looks like wheat. And when it first sprouts and grows, it becomes entangled in the wheat, and it is incredibly difficult to separate out. That's what the servants felt they should do, go and pull it up. Well, Jesus explains this parable. He says, the good seed, the wheat, represents the children of God, good people. The weeds represent the children of the evil one, the bad people. And the harvest represents the end of the age. And Jesus paints a picture of God's angels who at harvest time separate the good from the bad. And they do it according to God's judgment. Those who do evil, the parable says, will perish, and those who are righteous will shine like the sun with the glory of God. And you have to remember what the sun looks like in the Middle East. If you've been to the Holy Land or any desert country, you'll know that it can be very hot, very fiery, very dazzling, and at some times of day, so bright that people need to shade themselves from it. But that's what God's glory is like, says Jesus. Powerful and wonderful. And it's that glory that we, as followers of Jesus, are expected to reflect in our dealings with others, in the hope that they might find God for themselves. We are supposed to be the good people. But this parable is all about waiting for God to be glorified. The important message is that we are not to judge between the good and the bad. We are not to attempt to separate the good from the bad, even if we knew how. Because it's not for us to judge who is good and who is bad. That is for God to do, and he will do it when he is ready. There's something else I found very interesting in this reading, and it's the very last verse, very last sentence of that reading. Don't know if you spotted it at the end there. It says, "Listen then, if you have ears." And it relates back to those verses that talked about Jesus' use of parables. Jesus said, "I will use parables when I speak to them. I will tell them things unknown." Listen if you have ears. So why did Jesus use parables? Why did he seemingly want to confuse his hearers with these mixed up stories? Well, the scene of the telling is the lakeside at Galilee, and the hills around the lake make the inlets very much like amphitheatres. And so a crowd standing on the shore listening to Jesus could hear him very clearly. But did they understand him? "Some do, some don't," says Jesus. "Some already think themselves too wise and too learned." And indeed, many of the Jews that criticized Jesus thought of themselves as wise and educated men. But it wasn't to them that the truth was revealed, says Jesus, but to the unlearned. But also there were some that expected the kingdom to be brought in by force. They wanted to use the sword to oust their enemies, the Romans, and to free Israel. And they wanted to do it now. No waiting about for them. But there were some like these listeners on the lakeside who listened and understood because they were open to the message of Jesus. Their minds weren't cluttered with Jewish law and rituals. They didn't have the sword or the passion to go into action against their enemies. They were free from all those restrictions to think for themselves. Because that's what Jesus was asking them to do. By telling them parables, he wanted them to think for themselves and think about what effect that would have on their own lifestyles. These people that were open to a new message, a new lifestyle, were open to following the ways of God. And that's what Jesus taught them about, the way that they should live like God. God is loving. God is caring. And Jesus told his listeners that they must also be loving and caring. But he also taught that God is indeed judgmental. But we are not to judge, because God will judge us in the same way as we judge others. The gate to life is narrow, he says, and the way that leads to it is hard. So we must refrain from being judgmental ourselves. We can live the good lifestyle if we follow in God's way, but we mustn't criticize people that don't, because God is the one that will deal with that situation. And for some Christians, that way, following God, is much harder than for others. And the psalm reminds us of what it is like to feel persecuted. Sometimes the enemies will stop at nothing to discredit the Christian. But this reading tells us to be patient and to wait. Wait on God. And it is so hard, isn't it? I know times when I've been in trouble, maybe for no reason of my own, but it's got to be sorted and I have to wait. And that waiting is so difficult. And I can imagine that farmer in the parable getting very frustrated for the harvest, wanting to sort out the weeds, but he mustn't do it. Much better sorted out at harvest time. And I can imagine Christians who are persecuted for their faith, waiting what seems like an endless time as they hope for an improvement in their circumstances. And that in particular is significant for me because I'm a church representative for the charity Open Doors at Broxbourne and Cheshunt, and they support persecuted Christians. They help them with Bibles and training and aid sometimes. And one thing they do is encourage us to link with persecuted Christians. Now, I don't know if any of you do this. They encourage us to write letters to them. And as church rep, encourage me to encourage other people to do the same thing. And I'd like to leave a couple of these at the back. They're the latest at the moment guides for letter writing. And if you do have time, the inclination, have a look and see if you would like to connect with any of these persecuted Christians. And they have said that they really appreciate this support in their time of waiting, because they do have to wait often years and years for things to get better.